Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
A young basketball player who had dreams of becoming one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And as time went on, 20 years had passed, and he felt that he had accomplished all that he set out to accomplish. But what he come to realize is that the goal that he set out initially of becoming the greatest of all time was a very fickle one. And what he realized that the most important thing in life is how your career moves and touches those around you, how it carries forward to the next generation. But he realized that's what makes true greatness. So the story would be about transformation of a kid looking inwardly to then growing up and understanding the importance and the power is looking out. If I had the power to turn back time, I would never use it. I think about it. Because then every moment that you go through means absolutely nothing, but you can always go back and do it again. So it loses its flavor. It loses its beauty. When things are final, you know, moments won't ever come again.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer. Test drive the Hyundai Palisade today. We're going to talk to Roland Lazenby, the author of Showboat, The Life of Kobe Bryant, at 10 o'clock. Some point around 11 or shortly thereafter, Jason Goff from NBC Sports, the Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host, our longtime colleague here, is going to join us and give us his thoughts. We also are going to give away $1,000 cash at some point when we give you the text keyword to get your opportunity to win. And we do have multiple calls out there for some other perspectives on the life and shocking death of Kobe Bryant yesterday.
Yeah, it was... It was really something that we got the propers to do and the show to announce, but that's our schedule for the day. I don't know where you were yesterday when you found out. I was getting on a train to go to my girlfriend's place and was literally walking out the door as the phone started blowing up, obviously with, you know, news reports and push notifications and whatnot. And, you know, as I'm walking, I was just overcome and kind of taken over by this can't be true. You know, I mean, when you hear that Kobe Bryant has died in a helicopter crash and you see it on your phone, your first, at least my first response was, this isn't right. This is a spoof report. It's not true. It just can't be. And I just remember taking the train down and having this desperate need to go find a television, to go see what's going on. And kind of understand better what has happened to a guy that defined sports, helped define sports for me for almost my entire life. It was really it was really kind of something to understand that this momentous kind of life-changing, life-altering thing in terms of how you have appreciated a game for 20 years has just suddenly and irrevocably changed.
Yeah, I saw the TMZ report, and as soon as I saw the blue check mark, I knew it was true. Because you can say what you want about TMZ. Veracity is not their problem. You can talk about the ethics of sure. their reporting, and you can debate that all day as to what you should report and when you should report it. And that's for smarter people than I, perhaps, to discuss. But veracity is not an issue there, because the company was started by a lawyer, and they know the rules about how to do this and how not to do it in that regard. So the moment I saw the blue check mark and saw TMZ, I knew that it was just going to be a matter of time.
Yeah.
I think Variety was next, and then others began. Part of the problem was it happened the same morning as the Bears account getting hacked, and people immediately responding, oh, is this just another hack? Is this something else happening? Is there going to be a spate of fake stuff out there? And alas, it was not. So what can you say? I mean, some of us are inured to bad news as we get older, and some of us are, I guess, grimly resigned to bad things happening.
Right.
But it sucks. And the moment, it was made worse for me when I found out that his daughter was on the helicopter as well. But there are a lot of thoughts there. You think about Clemente, you know, like I mentioned, I thought about Thurman Munson. I thought about Stevie Ray Vaughan. I thought about, you know, a helicopter crashing in the fog and remembering how. And actually, the space shuttle disaster was the other thing.
Because
when I was in the hallway in high school, and that started filtering through. These moments of shock that, unfortunately, with time and with age and with a lot of horrible things that have happened and the emotional scar tissue that gets built up. You know, somebody, I think it was Jeff Perlman, who got in trouble for mentioning 9/11, not comping it to 9/11, but just talking about these things that hit you in certain ways that at some point you're never going to have, the way my parents talk about the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
That once they go through that, nothing quite has the same impact because of certain things that hit you in certain ways and do build up that kind of scar tissue. But he's an important historical sports figure for a lot of reasons we'll get into today. Not just what he achieved on the basketball court, but being of his era and being of the internet era.
Yeah.
And of the YouTube era. How people connected with him, saw his career, consumed his work, and how he understood that and cultivated that relationship is all part of what we'll be discussing today. And the very, very complicated aspect of his legacy and how that affected the way we looked at both him later in life, how he crafted a persona of the Black Mamba at a time when he needed a separate persona that allowed him to do certain things and approach the game in certain ways. But we'll do our best to get into all of it today and try to be to have the bandwidth to do this as reasonably and intelligently as we can.
That's yeah, I want you part of the conversation as well, of course. 312-644-6767. That's the phone number. You can text as well to 67011. And like Dan said, I think this is a day where we're just going to do our best, and you can too, and that's our show today.
Yep.
That's Twitter, kind of the focus.
If you want to reach out that way, is Bernstein _MCK. He's at C1 McKnight. I'm at Dan _Bernstein. Also, all the ways on the radio.com app that you can get at us. You can watch the video feed and be part of the streaming the show there. Facebook is available as well by liking the 670 The Score page. We got Zawoski, Camp, and Diaz doing what they do. But it's not easy on a day like this to try to be aware of everything and everyone. And I guess I had forgotten that Kobe Bryant's not yet in the Basketball Hall of Fame and is scheduled to go in now.
Yeah, along with some of their all-time greats. I know Tim Duncan would have been in that class as well. So to have, you know, to know that moment for basketball and for fans was forthcoming, you know, pretty obviously forthcoming, and to not only have that moment coming around, one would have been, you know, kind of joyous and fun and nostalgic and important all at the same time, but also have that moment going to be altered in a way that is, horrifyingly somber, I guess, to a certain degree. I mean, that Hall of Fame induction class will be something completely other and something completely different than what it was, what it could have been.
And I think, too, it matters the difference between, you know, the closest for someone at it, I believe Clemente was 37 and recently retired when he died. But the global nature of the NBA, of certainly the NBA that Michael Jordan ushered in, that NBA stars, that this is news in China and Russia and everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. This is a sports figure dying. It is a global story in a way that others have not been. Even if you're talking about some brilliant soccer player, the fact that this is this significant everywhere is a first of its kind.
Yeah, I mean, Neymar scored a goal yesterday and threw up, you know, a 2 and a 4 with his fingers. So, I mean, that's just one example of the global reach and, you know, how big of an icon. And it's just wild.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
How do you want to be remembered? What matters to you in this whole discussion of, okay, Kobe's last year? What do you want people to think of?
I've always said that I wanted to be remembered as a player that didn't waste a moment, didn't waste a day, and I felt extremely blessed by the God-given talent. But at the same time, I didn't take it for granted at all. And so if I could be remembered as a person that was born with a lot of talent, but did everything he could to try to overachieve, you know, and lived every day as if he was the 12th guy on the bench, you know, I think that's a very powerful message to have, and something that hopefully the players that are now and players that will come later choose to embody as well.
I don't think you can say it much better than to hear it from him himself. And the model for the immensely talented player driving himself like a have-to kind of guy was Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
But Bryant did the same thing without some of the pathology. He did the same thing without some of the craziness, frankly, some of the meanness.
Yeah, maybe. I think following Jordan the way you did, you obviously saw some of that up close. I think there are some teammates who would tell you that Kobe wasn't all that close. I think there are some teammates that say he had an indelible effect on their careers.
But not because he was trying to. It's very common for great players to not be remembered as wonderful teammates.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're in a different orbit.
Yeah, and I don't think his being, you know, if he wasn't the rah-rah guy, the consummate teammate, I don't think that necessarily tarnishes what he was trying to do on a basketball court. You know, he's got some complicated moments, both on and off. But, you know, you look back at a game where he doesn't shoot to let everybody know what's around him. You compare that with, you know, getting 81 against Toronto, 60 in his final game. You know, all these kind of 61 and they all kind of come together and speak to a guy that, I don't know, in my mind, sort of had two very different chapters in his career. You know, there's the early Kobe, there's kind of the late Kobe. There were trade demands. There was drama throughout his career,
and yet it was all with one team.
All of it, yeah. 20 years, and it's, you know, I think it's a really interesting conversation about the greatest Laker of all time. Kobe it's Kobe or Magic, right? I mean, those are the two guys. You can make a case for Kareem, and he'd play his entire career there. And I just with Kobe, I mentioned it during the transition with Malin Haugh. For me, knowing that he spent time in the league with Michael, albeit somewhat brief, but time in the league with Michael, and never made apologies for gunning for that kind of legacy, for playing the way he played. Hell, there are plenty of videos up on Twitter and all over the place where it's just, you know, Michael with a couple crossover steps, pop back shot, and then it's Kobe doing the same move 10 years later. Or it's that up and under layup. And then Kobe making that same move 10 years later. You know, all this stuff where you see the game and how well-crafted to duplicate Michael it was. And I always kind of respected that. I don't know if a lot of people who were Bulls fans did at the time. I think some did. I think some were concerned that Kobe was coming after Michael's legacy and that, you know, no one could touch Michael, all that kind of stuff. We talk about LeBron in the same way. And how LeBron will never be better than Michael. I don't know that the conversation we're having about LeBron James and this understanding, well, his game is different, or he doesn't need to be compared to Michael, or why can't you appreciate greatness all at the same time? I don't think the basketball viewing public gets to that point in the conversation about LeBron if you didn't have the conversation you had about Kobe beforehand.
No question. No question. And part of it was how the head-on embrace of it. When Kobe himself even began by aping Michael Jordan's speech pattern, his walk, the way he kind of jangled when he would, you know, transition from standing to sit. There was a whole thing, all the side by sides of Bryant almost, and it wasn't bad natured. It's just the way he had to go about it. He had to almost put on a Jordan costume to eventually try to break out of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it in exactly that way. That really does kind of encapsulate, at the very least, his first 10 years in the NBA. You know, because it changes once Shaq gets to LA, and it changes when he is, you know, searching for that second three-peat, and Powell comes in, and there's kind of a different feel to that Lakers team, I suppose. But you're right. It wasn't as though he, I don't think he was costumed by it. I don't think people threw Michael's legacy or mantle on him.
It's he almost, took it. No, he did it on purpose. Yeah, he had to wear it.
Yeah.
He had to try to wear the whole thing in certain ways just so he could eventually define himself differently. And you're right. There's no question that evolution changed the conversation. I want to bring in Bill in Capitol Hill for his thoughts on the score. Hey, Bill.
Hello, lads. I want to ask you how the Empire's going.
Yeah, please don't.
I hear what you're saying. I appreciate your conversation about his Oedipal struggle with Jordan. And I think, you know, I admit I sort of fell for it. I've been dismissive of Bryant as a player because it felt very derivative. But I think in the long sweep of history, I think just in terms of the game, I think we're going to look back and see, you know, he's also an important transition as the NBA goes from having global fans to having global players. And his, you know, background in Italy and the way he adapted to Powell, you know, for instance, Pau Gasol, the Spaniard. I mean, and the NBA that he came into was still an American league that just happened to have a global audience. And now it's a global league with a global audience. And it's the style of play is completely different. And I think in many respects, I wonder if we're going to look back and appreciate Bryant as someone who helped make that happen and sort of without even quite meaning to.
Yeah, Bill, as a force of internationalization, you know, I think we should bring up too. Not only did he grow up speaking fluent Italian,
trilingual, I think.
Yeah, but he's named after a Japanese prefecture.
That's right, and I think to go to the elephant in the room, I think Charlie Pierce had the best essay this morning. I don't know if you've seen him in Esquire. How we view Kobe Bryant depends on how well we believe that he learned from the experience of that rape. And, whether we think he was truly reformed or whether we think it was a marketing gimmick. And I admit my own ambivalence here. I'm not sure what to make of it, but I think in as much as one is willing to credit his sort of conversion, right, that this was what snapped him out of it, and got him to put his life together. If you're going to believe that, and I'm open to it, it seems to me that he's a really compelling argument for restorative justice, right? That like that there's got to be a way we've got that in a weird way he might be an answer to our Me Too moment. That we've got a lot of powerful and sick men who've done unspeakable damage to their fellow humans, and we've got so many we don't know what to do with with it and what's to be done. And it may well be that, I mean, assuming if we're going to take it, if we're going to agree that he was rehabilitated, maybe we can learn from that.
It's a good thought. It's a way of finding the positive in the negative.
Yeah, maybe there's a difference between, you know, between forgiveness and acknowledging someone's quest to be a better person at the same time. You know, I don't know that you have to do one to get to the other.
Nor do I think it has to be violent crime when you look at a case right here in the NBA with somebody like Tim Hardaway.
Sure.
Where something that might be where, you know, sticks and stones, obviously, where just words can't be as damn, for somebody who genuinely did become a different person because of missteps.
Yeah, Kobe's involvement in the GLAAD charity, his involvement with LGBT community
after after he used a word he shouldn't have used.
Right.
Right.
And he after that moment, I don't know a better way to put it, sought an education and sought to make amends. And while, you know, like I say, that endeavor doesn't have to come with your forgiveness of the act, I think the endeavor is absolutely worth acknowledging.
That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. You're listening to Bernstein and McKnight. And just kind of, what can we say? We're going to be talking to some people today. We want to talk to you as well. And phone lines are open. If you have thoughts, are certainly welcome. And we'll do our best on a difficult day. 312-644-6767. You're listening to The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Double teamed O'Neal. Horn. Fisher. Nice rotation of Bryant. Buckle up for Kobe Bryant! Kobe Bryant just sucked the gravity
athletic superstar who came along at a time when we were just able to share things in the moment, be able to watch these videos. You want to see the legacy of Kobe Bryant? Look at Jason Tatum.
Sure.
And listen to what Jason Tatum said about growing up with video on his phone, of growing up with being able as a little kid to pattern some of his footwork after Kobe Bryant. You see that in these guys. Bryant was the superstar where, you know, with Michael Jordan, you had to get the VHS tapes.
Yep.
You had to ka-junk and put that thing in and rewind.
You sit through the whole first 10 minutes with Ahmad Rashad before you got to the actual highlights.
You had Frank Layden jokes, yep, and all that stuff before you got to the stuff you needed to see. But this was Kobe Bryant was not a VHS, not a CD-ROM career that people were able to watch him and consume him and have him a part of their lives in ways that other sports stars before that, international megastars, were not.
Bill from Capitol Hill was talking about this earlier on in the show, and I think it's kind of apt. I had read, I think Bill Simmons kind of writing about it a little bit. Kobe's an international guy. He grew up in places overseas. He has exposure to places playing basketball other than the United States. He didn't go to college here, all that kind of stuff. He did apparently a lot of embracing European players and the style in which they played. I think a lot of times, I mean, you know this, you probably had a bunch of European guys, you know, playing in the CBA that might have otherwise gotten shots at the NBA, if not, you know, full careers, mm-hmm, but certainly shots at the NBA. I think for a while that game, that style of game, especially coming over, was widely regarded as just soft, too soft to really matter in an NBA that for a while in the beginning of Kobe's career was played underneath the hoop, was played physically, was played strong. And you have all these stories, but not that there weren't European players in the NBA at the time, but I remember growing up and, you know, some of those battles with the Kings and all that stuff, the only thing I knew about Vlade Divac, you know, as a kid, is that he flopped all the damn time. And I knew that because that's how it was told to me by the broadcasters, by my dad who watched, you know, all that kind of stuff. And this was
interesting how you bring up Vlade when that was the guy for whom Bryant himself was dealt.
That's the reason I brought him up. You know, I mean, this is he also began to work, and his work with Team USA and his playing on Team USA and how that kind of his work ethic started really getting into some of the younger players in this league. And then you see a couple of them go on to have some of the best years of their career after they'd had spent that time with Kobe on Team USA. I mean, that's part of his legacy as well, at least on the basketball court. Here's a couple of fun things about his career, right? He's a five-time NBA champion, won the 97 dunk contest. He's the youngest all-star of all time. I have two fun-ish lists for you, right? He won the MVP finals MVP in 2009 and 2010. He is one of six players in NBA history to have ever won consecutive finals MVPs. Any guesses as to the other ones? They're names and names and names and names and names.
It's obviously all these. It's going to cross over with all the MVPs. If you're going to have Jordan.
Yep. Jordan did it twice. He was the finals MVP for each one of his rings.
Shaq,
three consecutive. The only other guy to win it three consecutive times.
Duncan?
No. Timmy got interrupted in between one, if I was reading it correctly, if I'm remembering correctly, or in between two.
Were there two for Akeem?
There were. There were two for Akeem.
That's
yeah.
right.
You've got...
Russell got a couple when they had, you know, that whole eight in a row thing.
Did not, actually.
That's weird.
I know. I was looking back through it myself. LeBron James.
Okay.
And Kevin Durant.
Wow.
That's it. It's one of six. He's one of five players to average 35 points for an entire season. He did that in 2005 and 2006. Those five players, obviously, Wilt Chamberlain did it five times. Michael Jordan, you want to give a guess at the other two? One guy you hate, one guy everybody else hated.
I don't even know where to begin.
Harden
with
and Rick Barry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't hate James Harden.
Well, everybody hated Rick Barry.
I don't like watching his game. Yeah, Rick Barry, a little different story.
Nobody liked him.
No.
But that those are the lists. I mean, those are the lists he populates. He had 60 in his final NBA game. He has the second highest scoring game of all time in the NBA, 81 against Toronto. That's kind of his resume.
Sean is in Knox, Indiana. He's on Bernstein and McKnight on the score. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to articulate this the best I can. This has been a very emotional time for me, and I can't quite put into words why. Because Kobe Bryant, Connor, I'm right there with you. I'm 33. I'll be 34 in August. Mm-hmm. So Kobe Bryant was, from a basketball intellectual standpoint, the first guy to ever look at and be like, man, that's the pinnacle. That's the best. When Jordan was in his heyday, I was, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. Couldn't quite appreciate how great he was. Bryant was the first one to be like, okay, you know, I'm going to go down to the court and this is the guy I'm going to try to emulate, you know? And the funny part about it is I've been an emotional wreck and I was trying to rationalize it with my wife last night, just bawling my eyes out in the way I haven't done in a decade. And I'm like, I don't know why this is hitting me so hard. I don't get it. And she's just saying, you don't need to rationalize it. And I think the worst part of it all, because I'm a father, is the fact that he had his daughter with him and the reports coming out that everybody that was a victim of that crash was either a parent or a child. And Dan, you said it best. It sucks that you have to have something like this happen to really put in perspective of what it really is important.
Well, no one should. Yeah, that really, it's my hope that we can always do this and do other less important things in life while retaining that kind of perspective.
Yeah, exactly. But Kobe Bryant was the closest thing to Michael Jordan. And as a Bulls fan, and again, this is a purely emotional take. I'm thankful as an intellectual basketball fan to be able to at least see version 2 of what Michael was in his heyday.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. John. Yeah, I would appreciate Kobe Bryant for what he was. I don't necessarily think it has to be defined by some how it is relative to Michael Jordan.
I think a lot of people it will be. You know, people my age, Sean's age, they, you know, we saw Michael, we understood it, but for a little while you got to rep Kobe and kind of be an iconoclast a little bit, talking to your dad's friends or whatever about the hoops that they saw and the hoops that you're watching, and Kobe got to be your guy a little bit. You know, he got to be something else that you could kind of have the conversation about. And that was important for a lot of people, it seems.
Yeah, we're not in a position to psychoanalyze anybody, but if you're asking why you're taking it so hard, why people are taking it so hard, it's because of the suddenness and finality of it. That's anytime something like this happens and somebody who seemed larger than life, the reminder is always that no one is. It's coming for all of us. It's coming for all of us. And I think sometimes it's that recognition that we couldn't function if we were conscious of it all the time.
Of course not.
If we spent all our lives being that conscious of it, everybody would be in a constant panic attack.
That's why things like this are wake up calls for a lot of people.
Yeah, but that's a fact. That's a reminder that's an inevitability, and confronting that inevitability can rattle some people.
Roland Lazenby is the author of Showboat, The Life of Kobe Bryant. He wrote the book on Kobe. He is our next guest. You've got Bernstein and McKnight, Remembering the Life of Kobe Bryant, for most of the morning. Roland Lazenby up next on The Score.